The law.
Rules coming from where? The law. Where do those... We said last class they were rules. Somebody said they were rules. Where do these rules, these quote-unquote laws, where do they come from? Government. Why? You're right. They come from government. But why does the government pass laws?
To keep order.
To keep order. Anything else?
Guardrails, yeah, we like that one. Anything else?
Oh, I like the way you said that. To help break human tendencies. Again, I know we all think we are so intelligent, that we are so moral, that we are so cultured. But truth be told, we're nothing but animals that have opposable thumbs. At any given day, all of us have the ability, programmed by nature, to act like the animals that we are. Well, the problem is if everyone goes around acting like animals, there could be violence, there could be death, there could be destruction. So let's make these rules to kind of keep our worst behaviors in check. Good. Why? Why? Why would we want to have a society based on these restrictions of our biological, natural tendencies?
Because some people just like do whatever.
And what are the consequences of people just doing whatever? Let me just make it real simple. Could you be here right now in this classroom at this college, trying to get an education, if all 350 million people that reside within this country's borders, at least legally, one day you just flip the switch and decide, we're going to do whatever we want, whenever we want, however we want. Could you be here? No, you could not have peace. You could not have calm. You could not have an existence. Because everyone would be killing everyone else to get the few meager possessions that they have. Let me just make it real simple. I'm sure you've all watched those dystopian movies, End of the World. And one of the common themes is people just lose their minds. And ultimately, the people who end up surviving are those who are craziest. Or at least have the most ammunition.
Because if it came down to it,
and it was a matter of me having a gun and a whole bunch of bullets, and you having food that I needed to feed my family, and there were no rules, what do you think the end result is going to be? Don't take it personal. I love my wife and my kids. And I don't think that any of you would think differently,
given the circumstances.
So we need those rules in place. We need those laws, whether we like them or not. Because it's the laws, it's the rules that allow you to do small things like come to college and get an education. Or go down to the grocery store and buy food. Or get a job and pay your bills. If we didn't have laws and rules, the alternative is anarchy. And again, I don't think any reasonable-minded person would want to live in that market.
I mean, yeah, we could all sit back and, oh, yeah, tough, I could do it. No, but no, at the end of the day, the truth is, no. I think we're all good with that. So just remember, as bad as you think the world is, it always can be worse. Who are you?
My name's Tyler. Sorry.
I wasn't going to let you go by without noticing you. Did you add the class, or were you registered and didn't come on Wednesday?
I was registered, but couldn't make it on Wednesday. I couldn't get through the snow.
B-E-C-K?
Yep.
Easy Beck. And is it T-Y-L-E-R?
Yep.
before I forget, I did record Monday's lecture. I did post it on the website. I did it yesterday. So for those three of you that were not here, you can go on my website, which is accessible through Blackboard. There's a link that said Problematics website. Go on there, go to the audio lecture so you can listen to what you missed. Most of it, we just covered what the class is all about. We covered the syllabus. But we did begin a little introduction of the law. All right, I wanted to circle back to the concept of the law because this is something that a lot of us have a hard time really understanding. If the law is being made for our own good, the law is also going to impose required behavior. Things that we have to do, even if we don't want to do. Legally speaking, they're referred to as duties. And here's the greatest irony. If you fail to do what you're supposed to do, legally speaking, you are in breach. And under the law, the moment you are in breach, you are going to be subject to some type of liability. Consequences. Something's going to happen to you because you didn't do what you were supposed to do. Right? We all know this. This is all, I guess, I would like to think, is common sense. And here's the greatest irony. What are those liabilities? What is the outcome of the breach? Well, ultimately, it depends. It depends on what it is you did. Now, I'm sure some of you, whether you're criminal justice majors or not, have heard the phrase criminal law. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today, a little later. But just to make it real simple, if you commit a crime, that means you are violating some type of law that the government said do not do. So in a sense, you are in a breach of your duty as being a citizen. Because the state or the national government or even the town has said don't do that. Now there are also circumstances, granted most of it comes from the courts, where if you do something to somebody else, you fail your duty to somebody else, well, that person has the ability to take you to court through what's known as the civil law. The civil law. But ultimately, whether it's a criminal case or a civil case, the outcome is generally the same. If you breached your duty, you're going to be held responsible, liable, either criminally or civilly. Let me give you an example. Here's a little hypothetical for you. Borrow a boat. Give it a gander. That they have the projector aligned to the screen. That's good. Anyone not done yet? Who wants to play? Who wants to win esteem in the eyes of the professor? No volunteers? All right.
I feel like a Steve Sue's. Ted would at least have to pay him the money to fix the boat.
Okay.
That's one thing.
All right. So let's just start there. If Steve sues and wins, Ted is going to have to pay. How much?
I think definitely more than the 150.
Why more than the 150?
It's kind of like a liability.
Well, hold on. Let's take a step back. All right? Did Ted owe a duty to Steve?
To listen to him.
To listen to him. Why?
Because the only reason why Steve let Ted use the boat was if, like, he listened to what he said. Like, don't go.
So, like, the conditions of actually taking possession of someone else's property. You have to use it the way the owner wants it. Is that always the case? The owner of property gets to tell the person who uses it how to use it? It is. It is. If you legally own something, you have the exclusive right of control. You can tell somebody how to use it, when they can use it, if they can use it. Why? Because it's yours. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So Ted owns the boat. And he tells Steve, yeah, you can borrow it for the day, so long as you do what I tell you. Did Ted do what he was told? So now suddenly we have a duty that was owed that's breached. Okay, now we have to put on our lawyer hats. What was the direct damage resulting from the breach? Water damage in the amount of $150. Okay, very good. Was there any other damage? Nope, not at all. He wasn't caught. Was he caught doing anything that was criminally illegal with the boat? Nope, there's nothing in the facts that it was illegal for him to take the boat into the ocean, out of the bay. But is that a crime?
No, it's just the law that he said.
Who said?
Ted.
No. Ted. Okay, so we're going down this route because we got to determine is if this is civil law or if this is criminal law. It's definitely civil. The state's not involved. So there was no crime. There was a breach of trust. But that's not a crime. Okay, so we don't have to worry about where. Oh, by the way, if it was a crime, an act committed against the state, what could be the potential penalties? What happens when you run amok of the government? What could happen to you?
Prison.
You could go to jail. What also could happen?
Pay a fine.
You could pay a fine. And in some instances, what also could happen?
Death penalty.
Death penalty! So the consequences of committing a crime are severe. The government has the right to take your life, your liberty, and your property. But no crimes are committed here. So it's unlikely Ted is going to get sent to the electric chair, right? Okay. So now we're talking civil liability. So this means the only person who potentially could sue him is Steve. Oh, quick side note tangent. One singular act has the potential of being both a crime and a civil action. So you always have to be able to be ready to do that analysis. Is what he did a crime? Yes or no? If not, then you focus on civil. But if it's a crime, it could also be civil. I thought you saw you put your hand up.
What about the boat that actually did the damage?
What about the boat that did the damage?
Is he involved in this or not?
I don't know. You tell me.
Because I'm trying to get that guy's info. Because he's the one that... did the damage.
Did Ted go out and find out who the guy in the fast boat was?
Not sure. It doesn't state it.
It doesn't state it. So we can assume probably?
Not.
Not. You only can deal with what you have. Be careful on the natural tendencies to use your imaginations. Because often if I'm going to give you a question on an exam that's hypothetical, and you start using your imaginations, trying to think too far out of the box, you'll go down the wrong route and you'll be wrong. Only focus on what I give you. So to answer your question very simply, yeah, the other guy potentially could be liable, but Ted didn't do anything about it. And by the way, here's another thing to think of. If the other boat driver is the person who's actually responsible, does that eliminate Ted's liability to Steve? Well, no, it does not. So even if the other boat driver is the cause of the damage, it was Ted who's failed to uphold his duty, the duty he owed to Steve.
So the potential of a criminal could be that he was in the boat cruising around and he went to a bar. We don't have the specifics on that, but more than likely...
Is it illegal to go to a bar?
That's why I'm like, we don't have the specifics of what he was drinking at the bar.
Right, did I even say he went and got a drink?
No, you just said he went to the
bar. He just went to a jar. Maybe he likes the nachos there.
Yeah, more than likely, no.
Which takes it back to the point, only deal with what I give you. All right, so this is all important because this is the what you're going to have to do as you work through these situations. You're going to have to maneuver your gut feeling, your impulses, your imagination, and somehow narrow it down to just what I give you, and then try to work the results. Is there anyone in this class who believes that Ted should not be held responsible for the water damage to Steve's boat? Good. Last question. Does Ted owe more than the $150?
Yes.
Why?
Because he, if you commit a crime, you owe a fine.
There is no crime. This is a civil case. This is a breach of duty.
Emotional damage.
What emotional damage? Do you know the standards of getting emotional damage? We're going to talk about it. Just because you got a little, your boat got a little wet, that's not enough to have emotional damage.
Just 150.
Just 150. That's it. Because there was no other damage caused. By the way, in terms of civil law, you are responsible for the damage that you caused. Was there any damage caused when the boat went through the ocean? Was there any damage caused when the boat pulled up to the dock? I didn't say he smashed into the dock, he didn't scrape the boat. Was there any damage caused when the boat came back? What was the only damage? $150 worth of the upholstery. So Steve could sue. And in all likelihood, he will get the $150. Why? Well, as we're going to see, what Ted did was he committed what is called a tort. And a tort, not a tart, T-O-R-T. Torts are grounds for civil action. And the tort that he caused, for those of you who want to be nerdy and look this up, is called trespass to chattels. Trespass to chattels. Chattel. C-H-A-T-T-E-L-S. Chattels. Chattel is your property. His actions of causing damage to the boat interfered with Steve's ability to use his property. Because now the boat has to go and get questions. All right. Seeing none. That means the lesson from this case brings us to Lamannick's rule number 3. And this is a harsh one. And this is one that we're going to get when we start becoming adults.
whether we agree with the law or not. Whether we agree with the law or not, we can be forced to obey. Whether we agree with the law or not, we can be forced to obey. Why? Question? Kids, you can go with this.
By any chance, do you skip
Lamanic
rule number two?
No, what's Lamanic rule number two? No!
Ignorance of the law is not an excuse.
Ignorance of the law is not an excuse.
Other questions? Yes?
So for this scenario, would it actually like hold up in court though? So like if there was no like signed agreement, right?
100%. 100%. All Steve would have to do is prove that he let Ted use his boat. That's it.
That's it?
That's it. Because technically what was created is called an oral contract. And also he would have to produce what evidence that he suffered damage. What's that?
The boat.
Picture of the boat when it came back, yeah. It's easy as that.
But like, what if Ted says that, oh no, Steve said I could go wherever I wanted with it. Like, there's no like evidence of like what was said. Like, how would the court like...
He's not getting punished for going in the ocean.
He's just getting punished for the damage?
Exactly. Because what damage was caused by going in the ocean?
The boat. What if
Wait, hold on. What damage up there does it say was caused to the boat by going into the ocean?
$150?
By going into the ocean.
Oh, no. Going into the... Wait, what? Say it again.
Where was the damage caused?
On the boat.
It's caused on the boat. Where?
On the upholstery.
Where was the boat when the damage was caused?
It was parked.
Parked, right, exactly. It wasn't caused when it was in the ocean, was it? Mm-hmm. It was?
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, like, it was, but it was parked.
No, it wasn't. I said he went out into the open ocean in order to go to the Blue Oyster Bar, which was on an island. So the damage was caused when he was at the island, not when he was in the ocean. So the fact that he went in the ocean is not what he's being held accountable for.
What would if Ted's just like, oh no, he said I could do whatever with the boat?
Doesn't matter. He still damaged the boat.
But can't Ted just say like, he never said that if I damage it, I got to pay for it.
Right? That's bullshit. Like, the courts will impose that all the time.
Is that just like a unwritten rule? Like, if you damage it, you have to.
Who in their right mind would ever allow anyone to borrow anything if they're not going to be held responsible for taking care of what is borrowed?
Oh, that's why like rental companies, they have a whole signed agreement.
Oh yeah, and if you actually read those agreements, they actually put extra things in there. Because going back to the point when he could be held accountable, if he agreed to do extra things,
Yeah. You
know, if you sign, then that's a different scenario. But in this instance, the only thing he'll be able to get is the damage to the cup. Had he not gone across the ocean, could he have gone to the bar?
No.
And had he not gone to the bar, would the boat have been damaged?
Probably not.
So then he would he have to owe anything in that instance?
No.
No, not at all. But he did. He breached his duty, and now he's being held responsible for the damage caused. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, I was just confused on the... Because there's no concrete evidence of Steve telling Ted, you can't do this. It's just mouth to mouth.
The evidence is that there was damage done to the boat?
No, I understand that.
Because why else would Steve reasonably go to court if there wasn't damage done to the boat?
Yeah. But then you would also need proof of, like, before and after pictures. I feel like it's complicated.
It is complicated, but again, with this small amount of damage, it's not like he's saying the boat was sunk,
Yeah. The
boat was set on fire. It's a minor little damage, so the chances are the court is going to agree. Plus, you know what happens when you go to court, right? Even for small civil claims cases, you ever been in court?
Only for speeding tickets.
Okay, and when you went to talk to the judge magistrate, did you not have to take an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yeah.
You know what happens if the court finds out you're lying?
Get punished for it?
Yeah, it's called contempt.
and that could result in thousands and thousands of dollars. So the smart thing is, if you go into court for any reason, you always tell the truth as well, even if you're going to be held accountable.
People lie in court all the time, though.
I know, and if they get caught, there are consequences. All right, any other questions? All right, seeing none. Now, why? Why can you be forced to do something you don't want to do? Well, very simple. Government has authority to make the laws. If you read our founding documents, the Constitution of the United States of America, the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, somewhere in those documents it literally says that the people gave consent to create the government for their own good. So, as a result, the government is presumed to be the top authority. The government has more authority over you than anything else in society. The government's authority, it's called superseding all the other authorities that may be below. And it's based on a hierarchy. The United States government's on top. Then the state government. Then the local government. Then it goes down to like things like the college. Or it goes down to your church. Or, you know, maybe you're part of the Lions Club or something like that. All of those things fall below. But ultimately, if the government says thou shall. And if the government says thou shall not, thou shall not. Because if thou do when the government says thou shall not, consequences. And by the way, the government also supersedes your churches. Government is in charge. What about the college policies that you all have to agree on? That's in your student handbook. Who do they apply to?
Students.
How long do they apply to you? As long as you're a student here, right? What happens if you transfer to another school? Does the quin sig rules follow you? No. What happens if you don't like the rules of the college? You can leave, right? Can the school punish you for leaving? No, not at all. But what about the government? Do you have to follow the laws of the United States America? How long do they apply to you?
Until you're dead.
Yes, you're dead. So long as you're in the United States America. What happens if you don't like the laws of the United States of America? Maybe. We're the only country on earth that allows illegal immigrants to come in. So do you think you're going to get into Mexico? No, you know what happens if you get caught breaking into Mexico? The police have the right to shoot you. And they don't go on trial. I actually had a buddy that was shot in Brazil for 20 years ago by a cop. Because he looked at the cop the wrong way. Cop never got punished. We are the only country on earth that actually allows illegal immigrants to come in and give them protections. So if you don't like it here, chances are you're not going to be able to go anywhere. Because everywhere else wants documentation. So good luck trying to leave. And generally, if you are going to move somewhere else, the other country's probably going to be looking for you to renounce your United States citizenship so you come under their complete control. And I'll tell you, I've been to many countries on earth, and there is no place quite like home. So it's hard to leave the United States, which means you're probably going to have to follow the laws. What's easier if you don't like the laws of the state? You know, I've been planning my exit strategy for Massachusetts. I was born and raised here, and I'm sick of it here. Not because of the weather. I love the weather. I love the countryside. You know, the weird thing is I love many people that are here. I just don't like our government. So what do I have the ability to do? I could move to another state. And by the way, there are lots of states that are calling me home. But the problem is, some of those states have things that could, like, eat you, and other things that could bite you and kill you, and I don't know if I necessarily like that idea. But eventually I'll find a good compromise. Leaving a country's hard. Leaving a state's possible. What happens if you don't like the way your town is going? That's probably the easiest solution. Just pick up and move to another town. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the moment you go somewhere else, guess what? You're now subject to a whole new set of rules. So it's complicated. All right. So now here's an interesting thing. How do you learn the law? Well, you do not have to go to law school. You could actually use these little things to learn the law. Because there are, law supersedes. This, I want to get you to get this in this notes. You might be hearing this word on the news. This is a word I want you all to learn. The higher authority, their rules supersede the lower authority. And the laws of the government always supersedes the rules of any social organization. And again, hate to break it to you, even the rules of your church. So, for example, there's a tribe, an Indian tribe, where was this case come out of? I think it was Arizona, and they use hallucinogenic drugs, you know, as part of their rituals. And one of the members of the tribe was out on the street, walking around, tripping their brains off. And they get caught. And they were subject to arrest by the local town authority for public intoxication. And he actually tried raising the defense. It's part of my religion. It's a religious ceremony. And the guy lost in court. It didn't matter. If you use drugs as part of your religion, you could do so, but you've got to stay home. You can't go out in public if the law says you cannot be publicly intoxicated. Government will always win because the government trumps everything else. Questions? And by the way, I'm not trying to burst anyone's bubble. I just really want you to be educated. Because being a lawyer for many years, most times when people need lawyers, it's because they ended up doing something that was stupid that they could have easily avoided. And I don't want any of you ever to run into that circumstance. All right, so where do you find the law? Well, luckily, we live in an age where, again, you literally have this little thing. I know many of you spend your time watching your little TikTok videos and your Insta snaps and all those other time wasters. Maybe you're like Mrs. Professor Lemanic and get highly addicted to games like Candy Crush and all those other goofy things. But this is literally the key to unlocking knowledge that once required you to actually have to physically go to places like libraries and use the card catalog and take books off racks and read and read and read. You literally have the world of information at your fingertips. So if you ever want to know where the law comes from, here's a little guide. You start with the Constitution or constitutions. Because you also have to include the state constitution as well. So if you want to know what the United States government can do, you read the USS Constitution. The Constitution of the United States. USS Constitution, that's the boat of Boston Harbor. The Constitution of the United States of America. The Constitution literally is a frame of government that exists not to give you rights. That's one of the big things that most people do not understand. Our Constitution doesn't give you rights. Because in the eyes of our founding fathers, you are entitled to all the rights that God gave you. The purpose of the Constitution is to frame the government. Meaning, the Constitution tells the government what it can and cannot do. If the government uses a power that's allowed by the Constitution, and someone challenges that, takes it to court, the court is going to find that act to be constitutional. And the court will uphold it. But if the government acts in a wrongful manner, I don't want to use any spoilers, and the court says, no, you're wrong, then the court will declare that action to be unconstitutional. This is the thou shall and thou shall not for government. And by the way, if the government declares, sorry, strike that, let me be more precise. If the court declares an act of government to be unconstitutional, that means it can never be legal. An unconstitutional act is illegal. It's an illegal action for the government. Questions? Good, because we're not really going to do any constitutional law in here, because that is a class in itself. But if you do have any questions, you can ask me. Ooh, see? I wouldn't lie. It's actually in black and white. Yes. All right,
so,
go ahead.
So when you say it never could be legal, technically it could become legal if a law is passed.
No! I'll give you the technically.
Because I just want to throw this out there, because that's the whole thing with Roe versus Wade, is that it was considered unconstitutional. It was deemed back to the states, that the states have the right to decide that.
All right, so.
But if something becomes law in Congress, it then supersedes the states, correct?
Yes and no. I'm going to give you a better example.
Okay.
All right. Just trying to think of which example I'm going to use, because there's only been a couple of examples of this. All right. Did you know anything about Prohibition?
Yes.
What's Prohibition?
Is when they said that alcohol was illegal, and that's when they all started making it on the sign, moonshine, all that
stuff.
All
right, all right. So it got complicated. For about a decade, you couldn't enjoy adult beverages. Who's under the age of 21? You have no idea what I'm talking about. It's those things that you can enjoy the moment you become 21. Because, by the way, if you possess alcohol prior to the age of 21, you are committing a crime. So none of you have ever done that before. So Congress, and there was a bunch of teetotalers, a bunch of activists who were passionate about their cause, convinced Congress, we need to make it legal for some guy who's working his ass off in a 12-hour shift in some factory to go down to a pub and have a beer. Congress could not do that, because in the Fifth Amendment, Congress is prohibited from denying somebody the right, their life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So the only way to get prohibition through was to change the Constitution. So they passed an amendment, the 20th Amendment, which said Congress has the power to regulate and prohibit alcoholic beverages. Then the moment the Constitution was changed, Congress could then pass the law. The problem was, by the time of the Great Depression, it was a depressing time to live, no pun intended, people were fed up with it, and then they convinced Congress to pass the 22nd Amendment. So they took the power to prohibit alcohol away from the United States government, but gave it to the states. And the lesson in that is, unless it's expressly in the U.S. Constitution, the United States government can't do it. It's left to the states. So to bring it full circle, the mistake that the Supreme Court made in Roe v. Wade was there's nothing in the United States Constitution that gives the federal government the right to regulate a medical procedure. But they did it anyways, because as we're going to see, judges make shit up all the time. And that's one of the dangers of the courts. So the moment the Supreme Court did that, they took something that's reserved for the states and they created this false protection that is not part of the United States governmental system. Until the court recently reversed itself and said, no, the Supreme Court then got it wrong and it went back down to the states, where everything should be, in my opinion. You know why? We have the closest connection with our state government. We literally have the ability, if we get active, interested, and mobilized, we can persuade our state government to do what we want a lot easier than we can with the United States government. Long way to answer your question. Other questions? So what about those laws passed by the legislative branch? Those are called statutes. If the Congress can pass a law because the Constitution says so, or if the state can pass a law because the state Constitution says so, then what gets passed is technically called a statute. Not a statue. Not those. Statute. An extra T in it. A statute is nothing more than a law passed through the legislative process. So to make it simple, Schoolhouse Rocks. I'm just a bill, an ordinary bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. But no, I don't want that. In order for a statute to be passed, there's all kinds of checks and balances in the system. It has to be proposed in one chamber, then there's hearings, and it's marked up, and it's vetted. Then it goes to the other chamber, and if the other chamber wants to pass a law, they'll pass something similar, and then it's brought together, and once it's merged and signed off on and approved, then it goes to the president, or the president could sign it or veto it, etc. You have the ability to look up any law that's in the land. The entire federal criminal and civil procedures are all accessible online, as is what's called the MGL, the Massachusetts General Laws. So if you actually ever want to know, if you hear about something, if it's legal or not, you can look it up for yourself online. We're not really going to talk about any statutes, though. But again, this is where you can look. Third place to look for the laws. Executive orders. Executive orders. The executive officer, either the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, or the corner office under the Golden Dome up on Beacon Hill. They have the ability to issue what are called executive orders. And executive orders are essentially a directive by whoever the top executive is, be it the POTUS, the President of the United States, or a governor. Now, here is the weird, bizarre thing. If the executive issues said directive, it's actually challengeable in courts. Just like a statute is. And the courts have the ability to say the order was constitutional or not. But here's one of the weird things. There's nothing in either the U.S. Constitution or any state constitution that I've ever read that actually says the executive has the authority to issue orders. This is referred to as an assumed power. Because the idea is the executive is telling the people who work for the government how to do something. Case in point.
The very first executive order recorded in the United States was issued by none other than George Washington. When he was president, there was a whole bunch of bad stuff going on in the world. Most of it was caused by the French, because throughout modern European history, it was the French who instigated almost every single major conflict on Earth. And this was no exception. These were generally sometimes called the Wars of the French Revolution. Well, England lost to us when we won our independence. But England got involved in the war against the French. And the English didn't want us helping the French, which is kind of weird because I hate to admit it, it pains me. We could not have won our independence but for the help of the French. But the problem is that the French people killed, literally, the government that helped us. We got aid from Louis XVI, and they cut his head off in the guillotine. So the new revolutionary government was coming to us and saying, hey, look, we helped you out. Help us now. And England said, we don't want you helping them because we want to win the war. So they started doing things like stealing our ships and pressmen out on the high seas, trying to drag us in. Well, George Washington, being the most godlike figure that we've ever had in American history, because he always took a step back and looked at the big picture before making any decision. He also talked to everybody and tried getting all sides. Because there were people like Thomas Jefferson that would say, no, we gotta go and we gotta go help the French. And there were people like Alexander Hamilton that would say, no, we gotta go help the English. And George Washington's just like, I don't think us getting involved in a war is a good thing. So Washington did the non-choice. He basically said, we're gonna be neutral. And he issued an executive order declaring that we are going to be a neutral nation. And he told all of the government agents to arrest anybody on any political party, any little group that is doing anything trying to drag us into the war on either side. Well, why didn't he just wait until Congress passed a law? Congress would have passed this law if he asked. Well, back then, Congress only met for a few months in the summer. And then they went home because there was no planes and trains and automobiles. They had to go by horseback. And at the time, the capital was in Philadelphia. So if you were in Maine or if you were in Georgia, that's a long horse ride. So he couldn't wait because he knew if he waited, we'd be dragged into a war. No one ever sued him, so it never got into the court. So a court never reviewed it to determine whether it was constitutional. And as a result, it became precedent. Since then, every single president and just about every single governor of every single state has issued executive orders. And it's all the same. What they're supposed to do is they're supposed to tell government officials how to act. Why? Well, because most of the executive orders are just slightly, they're tweaking statutes. Because if Congress passes a law that says, for example, it's illegal to possess large quantities of, dynamite. Oh, wait, but there are accepted uses of dynamite. Like for building buildings and leveling areas and making roads. That's how they pass laws, by the way. They say, you can't do this except you can do it in these instances. Well, who defines what those instances are to what limit? Well, it's typically the executive branch. And so typically what happens more often than not, most executive orders is the executive telling the executive officers how to do the job.
But in recent years, the presidents in particular have been using the executive orders to get around Congress. Going back to when William Jefferson Clinton was our president, he issued executive orders to get around the laws and the legislative power of Congress. And then the moment Clinton did it, George W. Bush did it. And then the moment George W. Bush did it, Barack Obama did it. And then Trump did it the first time. And then Joe Biden did it again, and then Trump has been doing it since. Why? Well, unlike what used to happen before probably the 1980s, when it seems our country really got hyper-partisan, back not too long ago, in my lifetime, the Democrats and the Republicans used to try to reach compromises and always try to do something for the good of the people. But then around the late 80s and early 90s, it became like really the D's no longer wanted to work with the R's and the R's no longer wanted to work with the D's. And they started engaging all of the kind of stuff that you hear about that's really extreme on the news today, where basically the D's say that the R's are Nazis and the R's say that the D's are communists. You know, there's no effort to reach across the aisle. Well, it's because of that that presidents basically feel they have to do it. For instance, you know what it takes to pass a law in the United States government out of the United States Congress?
Two-thirds
in the Senate, in one branch, because the Senate has the power to basically stop any legislative action. Through what? Think about it, get back. Anybody know? What happens in the Senate that requires 60 votes?
Majority.
Well, it's a super majority.
And then two-thirds.
Two-thirds, right. But what is the process called when they're trying to pass a law? And it allows the minority to basically stop the passage of a law unless they get a super majority.
There's your homework.
All right, another thing that presidents do is they also frequently undo the executive orders that were done by their predecessors. Very easy. Trump, when he was in the first time, passed an executive order that marshaled national funds to build a border wall. The first day Biden was in office, he issued an executive order that basically canceled that order. And then the first day Trump was in office, he canceled Biden's cancellation of his past law. That happens frequently too. And that's just one example. Obama, when he was in office, he undid just about every single executive order that George W. Bush passed. So it's just not modern. It's been going on a lot over the last couple of decades. But even Trump's executive orders or Biden's executive orders, they do get challenged in the courts. And if the court basically declares it's unconstitutional, it will be overturned. We're not doing executive orders. Just like giving history lessons. Fourth area of law. And by the way, if you go into business, administrative law typically refers to all of those governmental regulations that are passed by the different government agencies. Why? Well, again, Congress will pass a law that says, for example, we should have federal oversight over the airwaves. So they'll pass a law, it was passed back in the 19-teens, called the Federal Communications Act, that basically said all transmissions, any type of broadcast, is regulated by the federal government. But how the heck did Congress do that? They had no idea what would come technologically wise. Back then, they were just having innovations with the first wireless communication. They never envisioned satellites and cell phones and all the rest. But interestingly enough, the FCA is still in effect today. Because in that law, they also created an agency called the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, that makes all of the broadcast rules. So if you have what's called a ham radio, a wireless radio, and you try talking to your neighbor, and that signal goes beyond your actual property lines, which of course, if you're trying to talk to your neighbor, it is. You're in violation of federal law unless you get a federal license to use that ham radio. Now, the funny thing about these regulations is they will be enforced. Oh my God, that was the example I used. I thought I was being clever. Look, look. I just pulled an example out of my butt. And it turned out to be the one I put in my notes. Oh, I actually have more in here. The Title 47 of the Code of Federal Regulations. Oh, this is a better example than the one I used. You have a laptop in front of you. Did you know under federal law, that's called an unintentional radiator? Because you can radiate communication signals, right? Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. Do you need to get a license to operate that? You don't. You know why? Because the FCC has decided to allow people to have laptops that have Wi-Fi chips in them. They've determined that that's useful. So even though you can use those little devices to engage in all kinds of shenanigans, you do not need a license to use a laptop. But what happens if you use a laptop on an airplane during takeoff? While the FCC says you don't need a license to use a laptop, another federal agency, the Federal Aviation Agency, the FAA, prohibits you using a laptop during takeoff and landing. Guess what happens if you get caught? Section 49 of the U.S. Code, subsection 46301, you are subject to fines up to $75,000 and you will be put on the no-fly list. All because you couldn't wait until you got to 35,000 feet when the flight attendant said, now you can take out your personal computing devices. Imagine that. You would be labeled essentially as being a terrorist. Why? You broke federal law. Questions? And let's go back to Lemanic rule number one. Do you have a right to break the law? Another interesting thing, if you're going to do a business and you're going to engage in international business dealings, you are subject to all of the laws that have been created as the result of treaties that the United States has made. What's a treaty? Between?
Two parties, two or more parties.
Particularly?
Countries.
Countries, yeah, nations. Treaty is an arrangement made between countries. If we have a treaty with a country that allows you to do the type of business that you do with that country, you legally can do business. But what happens if there is no treaty? Can you do business with that country? Like, as much as you wanted to, could you do business with a company in North Korea? Or Iran? Or who are the other bad states?
Actually, I think the other
Cuba. Not allowed to do business with countries in Cuba. What happens if you do? I can tell you. The federal government will take your license, will take your company, will take your assets, and chances are you will be held personally responsible for the actions of the company, which means you will go on trial and probably subject to millions of dollars in fines and probably life in prison.
Why? Well, in the Supremacy Clause of the USS Constitution, sorry, I did it again, the United States Constitution, it reads, and I quote, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And judges in every state shall be bound thereby, and anything in the constitutional laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding."
If the United States government, because of this clause, says jump, even the states have to say, how high?
Questions? Almost done for the day. One more example I want to give you. No questions. Let's see, none.
The sixth area, and we only got time to do one, is judgment law. So there are seven sources, but this is the sixth source. But from this source comes two areas of law.
The area that we're going to cover today, and then we'll do the secondary one next class, is what is referred to as common law. Common law. These are the rules, the laws, that come out of court decisions. Literally made by judges. Our legal system we inherited from England. In England, going all the way back to 1066, when William of Normandy crossed the English Channel and defeated the English at the Battle of Hastings, and imposed his will on that nation island, he ordered that all judges must make their decisions not based on what they want, not subjectively, but rather they had to base their decisions on precedent, an existing rule. Why? Well, continuity, consistency. When William conquered England, you have these foreigners who are coming in and conquering another foreign race. The Normans were descendants of the Vikings, and they conquered the Anglo-Saxons. And so they impose this new culture upon their subjected peoples. But William wanted to make sure that all throughout his country, the same decisions would be being made. Continuity. Consistency. And then during the reign of his great-great-grandson, all of these decisions were written down by a man by the name of Henry de Bracton. And he wrote a book called On the Laws and Customs of England, which, to make it real simple, is the equivalent of this. It was a law book where he tried writing down all of the major rules that had been passed by the judges. So that way all the lawyers could learn the rules. And so that way they would know what the claims were for their clients.
This process is known as stare decisis. So if you're writing, write just this. You don't have to write the stare decisis et non quieta moreve, which simply means to stand by decisions and not to disturb the undisturbed. Stare decisis, to stand on what's been decided. You have the ability to learn the law, because once the law was written, it stays in place. Unless something happens that results in a change. So here's my example, and then we're going to call it a day. The case of the thorns that was decided back in 1466 in England. Please read this quick. Is Mr. Orange going to be held liable for trampling and damaging the crops? Yes or no? By the way, the legal theory underpinning this case is the same as the boat one. What did Mr. Orange do? Where?
Dividing hedge.
But where did he go? So the hedge divides what? Both lands. Where did he go?
On his land.
He was on his land? Oh, he went on the other person's land. And what's it called when you go into the land of somebody else?
A trespass.
Oh! And what happens when you commit a trespass against another and you cause damage of any kind? You are going to be responsible for it. Just like the seat covers. Question? This is the precedent upon which all tort law is based. And it still applies even if you're going to get a motorboat seat wet. If you go into something owned by another and you cause damage of any kind, even if he had a right to do it, by the way, under the law, he does have a right to retrieve his own property. But he's not being punished for going and picking up all of the branches that fell into the neighbor's yard. He's being held responsible for the damage he caused. Because you have a duty to be responsible for the property of others and not damage it. It trampled hay, caused damage, limiting the profitability of the harvest, and he was held responsible for it, and he had to pay. That's stare decisis. Last chance for questions.
Let's say if he was cutting the trims, so that's his fault. But let's say if a tree falls on the plaintiff's.
Whose tree is it?
My tree. And it falls on his, but Mother Nature, I wasn't cutting it. It was just.
Oh, so it blows over?
Yeah.
Would a reasonable person believe that there was a health issue with the tree? Was it known to be dying?
None.
If it was known to be dying, yes.
But if it wasn't?
If it wasn't, no. because that would be considered an act of God. Other questions? See you all on Wednesday. Except for you. I don't know who you are in the back. And you are? Ma'am?
Oh, Betty.
Betty, okay.
Sorry.
No. I don't care that people come late. I just want to make sure I know that you're here.
OBM also.
Oh, you were here too. All right, you're good.
Thank you.
You too. Yes.
For the Senate earlier, it was a filibuster, right?
Filibuster. Well done. You should have said something.
I couldn't think of it.
Ah. Did you hear that?
I knew it was filibuster, but it wasn't coming to my head.
I got you.
Filibuster is what they're trying to get rid of.
Right. Well, it's funny.
That's the nuclear option, as they're calling it.
It's funny. The Republicans want to get rid of the filibuster when the Democrats are in charge, but now that the Republicans are in charge, the Democrats want to get rid of it.
It's the nuclear option. Yeah. When you hear it on the news.
Yeah, yeah. At the end of the day, me being old-fashioned, I kind of hope that it's there, because I like the idea of having those checks and balances, even if they're kind of wacky and archaic. Yes?
I just wanted to say I saw your wallpaper on your phone, and I love Rush as well. I got to see them on their last tour.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Very good. Were you in the Garden?
Yeah.
Oh, I was there, too. I was at that show. I never would have thought that that was going to be the last show or the last tour.
Yeah.
If I would have known, I would have gotten somehow tickets to get out to L.A. to go to the last actual concert.
Yeah.
Because I've seen him 44 times.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I got tickets to see him again because they got this new drummer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm not really expecting much more than like a really good Rush cover band.
Yeah. I'm very happy that I got to see them. I think I was 8 or 9.
Did your dad or somebody?
Yeah, my dad took me.
I did the same thing with my son.
He's been seeing them every tour since Signals. So.
Oh, yeah, that's... The first tour I saw him was Moving Pictures. My uncle took me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And the nice thing is, see, I got to see him so many times. Like, I didn't, like, pull a Grateful Dead. I didn't travel the country.
Yeah.
But Rush, when they came to New England back in the day, there was so many venues they could play.
Right.
Often they would come through and then come through again.
Mm-hmm.
So the Garden, the Centrum, they played a lot of shows at the Centrum. Down in Providence, Hartford, the Great Woods, or whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
So,
it'll always be Great Woods.
I know, it'll always be Great Woods, absolutely.
My dad calls it Great Woods, so I call it Great Woods.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, because it's changed, and it's like, whatever, it's Great Woods. We are, those of us of a certain age know what we're talking about, so.
Yeah, it's old folk.
Yeah.
But have a good rest of your day. I'll see you on Wednesday.
Yep, sounds good. I'm glad that your financial issue got dealt with.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
I had a quick question. Do we have any assignments to do?
Did you buy the book?
So I went to go, because it's a physical copy, right?
Correct.
It said that there were no, like,
So what I said, you said that you had to order them, because they didn't buy them.
But you might be able to find some on Amazon right now.
Yeah.
Amazon will probably get it here a lot quicker than bookstore, because I ordered mine before, Monday's class, and I still haven't gotten it.
Still not here yet?
Yeah.
That's crazy. So, yeah, the ISB is on my website. So you wrote my website down when we were covering it last class, right? Proflamanic.com?
You could probably get it here in 2 days on Amazon.
Yeah, probably.
And it's probably cheaper than
that. And like I said, you don't have to get the current edition. You could go and get the past edition, because
mm-hmm.
there's no big difference in the chapters that we're going to use.
Oh, okay. But those are where all the assignments are?
That was the homework that I gave.
Oh, okay.
I haven't given any real homework yet because I want you to get the book because it's very important that you start reading chapters 1 and 2.
No, yeah, yeah. I'm trying to get the book. I'm pretty sure I ordered it off the school website.
So once you get the book, then the homework is read chapters 1 and 2. And I'm going to start giving some extra homework. But again, I just know the book wasn't available,
I was just going through Blackboard. I didn't see any, like assignments, like, turn in.
All the homework is going to be on my website. And what you're going to do is you're going to write things out on paper and you're going to pass it in the old-fashioned way.
Are these lectures, can I still access them or no?
Yeah, it's on my website. In the audio lectures. Obviously, I haven't